Today is November 26, 2014, and this is episode number 282, wow, of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, palindrome wrangler. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, I'm gonna put my broadcaster voice on, my radio voice. You can visit macobserver.com/ACM, and if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
Hey Brian, that was really great the way you played off the palindrome thing with episode 282.
Well, it's despite the fact that it's not a palindrome.
I know that's. I love that people look at numbers like that. They're like, oh, palindrome. And it always reminds me of the Monty Python sketch where I think it's Michael Palin says, it's a palindrome. And John Cleese goes, no, the palindrome of Bolton would be not lob. which is brilliant because he said Bolton backwards. And there is no palindrome for Bolton.
That's true. Yes. Genius. They're bloody geniuses.
Absolutely genius.
They're geniuses. Geniuses. Speaking of geniuses.
So we're talking about me?
Yes. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm feeling geniusy.
You know another genius?
You?
Well, yes, but... No, Derek Culligan.
You know, I have to say that there's a bit of genius happening in Derek's world. Yep.
Derek Culligan is the creator of a bunch of steampunk stuff that is just, I'm obsessed with it.
Wait, steampunk, you say?
Right. Yes.
What is steampunk?
Steampunk is it's a literary genre or a subgenre of either science fiction or fantasy. You know, I wrote this up and I noted that kind of depends on who you ask if it's a subgenre of science fiction or fantasy. But steampunk is usually set in the Victorian world, at the very least, the equivalent of Victorian era technology, right? Because
yes.
Kinslayer, the books by Jay Kristoff, it's actually set in a Japan analog, so it's not Japan, but it's clearly Japan, and it's very steampunky, but because it's Japan, obviously, it's not Victorian, but it's that late 19th century era technology. So steampunk is pretty broad. But it's centered the original. It goes back to like 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Jules Verne novel written in the late 19th century, where you know all these things that eventually came to be, you know, in the 50s and 60s and 70s of the 20th century, were envisioned in the steam era.
Right. So modern style technology. But built around a more Victorian style theme,
a Victorian sensibility.
Victorian sensibility, sure. So you have steam powered, hence steampunk, and you see
a play on cyberpunk. By the way,
that's right. Total play on cyberpunk.
And it's gadgets. So like steampunk focuses a lot on fashion. And style, that sensibility we just mentioned, but then also you've obviously got steam, but you've got like a lot of clockwork devices. So all these things that we think of as modern, but accomplished in some sort of effectively magical, mechanical fashion.
The Wild Wild West from the 1960s TV show.
That is a steam. That is another totally massive steampunk. Pre-genitor.
Yes. And of course, at the time, steampunk wasn't used to describe the show because that wasn't a...
Yeah, cyberpunk hadn't been invented yet.
Right. Yeah. On the whole steampunk theme, there is a group of comic artists and writers that have put together a steampunk Battlestar Galactica series. Comic book series.
Fantastic.
And I've seen some of the art, and it looks wonderful. And I really need to start reading that, because it just looked great.
Yeah, there's a lot of art. You might be surprised at what you find.
Boy, howdy.
If you go searching for steampunk on the Google. But this is a family-friendly show, so we'll
keep our goggles on. And
we'll keep our goggles on, and we'll spare you some of the details of what we found today. So there's fiction, there's art, there's gadgets, there's clothes that's out there. And, you know, I love steampunk stuff. And I was looking for a lighter. Now, I don't smoke. I don't do any drugs. But I wanted a lighter to be able to melt those. I don't even know what you call them, but it's like if you solder two wires, there's a little rubber.
The little connector sleeve that you put on there.
Yeah, and the
heat shrinks.
The heat shrinks, right? And so, you know, I was wanting a lighter to use some of those and some soldering I've got to do, and it was my excuse to get a Zippo, because I've always thought Zippos were cool. And so I'm looking for Zippos, and I decided to search for a steampunk Zippo, and there are lots of steampunk designs out there, some of them third party, some of them from Zippo itself, but they're just screens. You know, it's just a screen of some sort of vaguely steampunkian image or something like that. But then I found this guy over at Etsy, Derek Colligan. His Etsy shop is called Steam Workshop. That's all one word. We'll have a link in the show notes. And he makes these just amazing pieces.
When you say amazing, you really mean amazing. That's not just hyperbole. The stuff he makes is amazing. It's beautiful. And it doesn't look like gratuitous steampunk styles that I've seen from other designers.
Yeah, I've seen stuff like, I remember I was looking for like a steampunk iPhone case about a year ago, year and a half ago.
I remember that.
And the only ones I really found were just like, you know, just a generic case where someone had just slapped on some like gears and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, nothing. And none of them were impressive at all. Nothing that I found to that era, to that point was impressive. I did find a couple of more interesting ones that had like you know, some piping that was soldered onto them. But I don't know. I didn't find a whole bunch of stuff that was impressive. But Derek Colligan's stuff. He does these lighters. Now the reason why we're talking about that on ACM is because he makes USB flash drives.
And boy, does he.
And these things are
just... his drives are so cool.
Incredible. Now, the article I posted has got several really good pictures of a motorized one. So this is a USB flash drive. First of all, it's got a screw-on cap. It's a screw-on cap. Is a screw-on cap convenient? No! Does it help? No, but it's cool.
It is cool.
And he's not using glue. These things are all brazed. That's a high temperature soldering, to closer to a weld, really. But he's brazing these things with silver. They, you know, they're all made with copper and brass and glass. And then he uses a lot of like watchworks, either on top. Well, actually, for most of the USB drives, if he's got gears and stuff, that's going to be inside, and you can see it through glass. Some of them are motorized. Some of them are not. And the motorized ones, when you plug it into a USB port, it activates the motor and the gears start turning.
And it is just so cool.
It is so cool. Jeff and I, when I found this, I immediately, I knew that Jeff liked this stuff too. And we spent an hour, maybe an hour and a half, just looking at all the different things the guy has sold. So he's got like 500 items that he sold. Over the, you know, however long the store has been around. Since every item is unique, there's only a few that are currently live at any given time. As a matter of fact, he's sold a bunch since I started researching them earlier this week. And, but so we're looking through all the stuff he's already sold, and we spent like an hour and a half geeking out until it's like, oh, we got to get to work.
Yeah. But it was a glorious geek fest.
It was.
I mean, these drives that he makes are just beautiful. The attention to detail, it's wonderful. And of course, when you're making something like this, what you're really doing is you're just doing a lot of greebling, that's a term that describes putting ornamentation onto something to make it look more busier. But
it's a great word.
Yeah. So like when you look at a spaceship in Star Wars, all that stuff that's on the outside of the hull that makes it look all busy and technical, that's greebling.
Yeah.
And that's really what you're doing with stuff when you turn it into steampunk.
Yeah. You're taking either a functional item and you're just putting a bunch of stuff on there that are strictly
ornamentation.
It's ornamentation. Yeah.
But the way he does it, it doesn't feel gratuitous. Like,
no.
Like a lot of stuff, I stuck a couple brass gears on here. Now it's steampunk.
Yeah. But this, man, I don't know. I'm totally obsessed. It's functional art. That's the thing about it. Is like, unlike a lot of steampunk stuff that's out there, this is truly functional art. Like, for instance, the steampunk Zippo. You can actually carry this around and use it as a lighter, assuming yes. That's your thing. The flash drive, you can use as a flash drive. And, I would imagine that most people would just go, what? Oh, these things light up, too. So if they've got glass, most of them light up.
Yeah, so they light up blue, and when they start doing data transfer, they flash red.
Now, I found some other, when I was doing this research, once I decided to turn this into a story, I was doing lots of research. At least that's the story I'm telling. And I found some that were like, I found some USB drives that were made with the body of a tube, as in a valve, an old-fashioned electronic tube. And technically, tubes are actually post-steampunk, but they still look cool. I've seen, these are just the coolest things that I've seen. And like I said, they're functional art. He's got those two lamps. He's got a gas lamp, an oil lamp, I should say.
The oil lamp is just so cool looking.
Yeah, he's. I like the oil lamp a whole lot, but I think I like the electric lamp better. The electric lamp just, oh man. Anyway, so this stuff is expensive. It's not expensive from what you're getting, in my opinion. It's not expensive for the work that goes into it. But
yeah, you're not buying a $20 USB stick. You're buying, as Brian said, functional art.
Yeah, the cheapest one I saw was $115. That was a pretty unornamented copper tube. The motorized ones tend to be $275, maybe $295, depending on the size of the drive inside. So these are not the kinds of things that a lot of people would be appalled at the idea of spending that much on a USB flash drive, but. I think they are so incredibly cool.
Did you mention that they're waterproof?
Oh yeah, the several of them, not all of them, right? If he says it's waterproof, it's waterproof. Right. And these motorized ones, so he's got videos. I included a video in the story that I wrote up where this thing is plugged in, and he dips it he puts it into a glass of water.
Yeah, he completely submerges it in water while it's running.
While it's transferring data, and the gears are turning and the LEDs are on, and it's waterproof such that you will not get any fog, because no water is, it's truly waterproof.
It's these things are just so cool.
Yeah So I'm totally obsessed. Oh, and he offered up when I told him I was going to do a story on his store and him, he offered up a coupon code, a Geek1, GEEK1, for 5% off.
Oh, cool. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's good through the end of the year. He told me he'd extend it if there was enough interest.
So if people are still looking for holiday gift ideas for us.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Oh, and he does custom orders.
That's really cool.
So, like, if you see something that he's already sold that you like, he'll make something similar. Now, all these pieces are unique, right? I mean, by definition, they're unique. But if you see something, some element that you like on something he's done in the past, he seems willing to incorporate that into a new design for you. Now, here's the funny thing. I started talking to him yesterday about the story. I started researching him the day before. Started talking to him yesterday about the story. Wrote the story. Got some high-resolution images from him to use for the story. Posted the story. And the one motorized device he had currently for sale sold and is being shipped to Budapest.
So the one that you'll see in the video is not available.
Correct.
But he can make more.
Yeah, that's true. Can totally make more. So anyway, I don't know. I'm sure there's a lot of people listening to us right now, assuming they're still listening to us, who are not interested. But this stuff just kills me.
It looks really beautiful. It really does. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. That's Steam Workshop. Derek Culligan is the artist. Called him the design engineer in the piece.
And I love that word.
It's a good
word. And I love that we both can really appreciate art like this and that we get really excited to talk about it.
Yeah. You know what I want? I want Derek Culligan to steampunkicize my Vespa. I want a mod Vespa, but steampunked.
Oh my God, that would be so cool. It would be the most ridiculous thing ever,
and I would love it.
Yeah, but part of what I'm visualizing now is it has a little water reservoir in it, and so the heat from the actual engine is used to make
steam.
Yeah, so you have a little steam pipe coming off of it, and as you're driving down the road, there's steam coming out.
That would be great. The only problem, of course, would be how much power I would lose having to carry around all the brass and copper.
Yeah, but it's so worth it.
All right. So let's see if we can.
How about steampunk your MacBook Air?
Oh, don't even get me started.
Too late. I've already planted the seed.
Oh my goodness, that's such a fantastic idea.
It would look so awesome.
That's such a fantastic idea. Now, you know what wasn't a very good idea?
Steampunking cats.
True. Actually, I can't argue with that, but I had something else in mind.
Do tell.
I was thinking about Apple's decision to hire, to get in bed with GTAT, GT Advanced Technologies, to make Sapphire. It seems like the more information we get, the more curious Apple's decision to work with this company it becomes.
You know, I have to agree with you. It just seems really odd because it's not like GTAT was ever a Sapphire Glass producer before. They made the kilns.
Yeah, that was like 15% of their business.
Right.
It was a small part of their overall revenues. All they made furnaces and they sold them to other companies that turned around and used those furnaces to actually make Sapphire.
But their main business, which was solar panels?
I think it's solar panels or something else, too. There's three businesses.
Yeah, and those businesses were all declining. Not like they were about to just completely implode, but sales were going down. And I've been developing kind of a hypothesis here.
Okay.
And that hypothesis is that when Apple went in with their original plan of buying furnaces from GTAT, at some point GTAT ran numbers and they're like, you know, all these other businesses are starting to drop off, but we have the opportunity to have a serious cash cow here from Apple if we do more than just sell them furnaces, but if we convince them to let us make the glass too. And then that eventually started to kind of come out a little bit in negotiations, and eventually Apple was like, hey, why don't we have you make the glass for us? And GTAT is like, yeah, we can do that. And they're thinking that they can because they already know the theory behind it because they know how to make the furnaces. And then it just kind of snowballed and imploded on them.
Yeah, well, so they said in their own court filings that they thought that this was a transformational opportunity for them. This could, I mean, this, in other words, that doing business with Apple would be, would really put them in a different league in the business world. And that's true if they could have done it. There is no doubt that they overpromise and underdeliver. Here's the interesting thing. These are things that we've been finding out in the court cases, in the court documents. Apple was looking for bules of I'm going to call it 320 kilograms.
I think that's what they ended up getting.
No, they never got. I don't even think.
Well, they got some.
They got like 240, I thought. 220 right, or something.
But GTAT promised that they could make them over 500.
Oh, is it that big?
Yeah.
Well, and that had never been done before.
Right. And so they had to scale back when everything came out of the furnace totally trashed. And so that's when they went back to, was it like 320? And it looks like they still weren't able to produce perfect glass most of the time.
Yeah, and right, because here's why we're talking about this. These are all things that we more or less roughly knew, but why would Apple put so much money into a company who had never done this before? So they made furnaces. They didn't operate furnaces. Why? It seems like, I mean, clearly Apple knows more than I do about what Apple is doing. This is more like I'm really curious as to I'm necessarily a criticizing, because I clearly don't know the entire decision making process. But it's just weird. The more we learn, why Apple would have gotten into bed with GTAT in the way that they did.
It does seem weird. And this goes back to what you've said before, which is when something just simply doesn't make sense and seems irrational, there's a key piece of information we're missing.
Yeah, that's probably true. I mean, you know, one thing we don't know, GTAT may well have promised Apple the moon. They probably, it seems very logical that the GTAT people gave Apple reason to believe that they could produce unprecedented Buell sizes.
Sure. I mean, I can't imagine that they would have told Apple something different simply because that was part of the deal. And if nothing else, Apple said, hey, we'd like to get bigger Buells. And GTAT is like, no problem. But that doesn't seem as likely. I think it's more likely that GTAT said, you know, we can make these bigger Buells and that will save you money.
Well, I think that Apple probably needs the larger Buells in order to be able to get the kind of yield it needs for the very large iPhone screens, because no one's used Sapphire of that size before. And so in order to get the efficiency out of a Buell in terms of being able to cut up these Buells into the sizes they needed, I think they needed the large blocks and to get that size. That's my assumption, at least.
And that may very well be. I'm thinking they could do it with the 320 kilogram Buells, but that it was more cost effective with the larger ones.
Yeah, definitely cost effectiveness had a lot to do with what was going on with all this. But it's just weird that Apple would get into bed with a company of that size with a risk this big. Apple's probably going to end up losing at least $200 million off this. And that's not counting their time. That's not counting the improvements made at the factory in the plant in outside Mesa, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
It's not counting, just $200 million just in the money that was loaned to GTAT. That would be my guess. I mean, Apple's got plenty of money to lose, but It seems weird. And so now we have the reason why we're talking about this today is we got a story coming out of Taiwan that the Taiwan branch of Foxconn has entered into an agreement with Apple to build a Sapphire plant.
And that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, 133 hectares.
I'm assuming that's how it's properly pronounced, because that's exactly how I say it.
That works for me, although you also say warsh.
And...
So this place is going to be built... government in... Oh, no, actually, I guess this factory would actually be in China. The agreement was apparently signed with Jingzhou City, which is in Henan Province, 133 hectares, and where Foxconn is going to be making Sapphire. So, in other words, Foxconn would buy furnaces from a company like GTAT. As a matter of fact, I hear that GTAT is trying to sell some.
No kidding. Yeah, word on the street is they have a couple to offload.
They have a yeah, and that Foxconn's going to it's going to operate this plant for Apple. So once again, Apple is making a deal with a company that has not made Sapphire in the past. But I would guess that Foxconn can do this more easily than a company like GTAT ever could have.
I'm betting you're right. And I'm betting that Foxconn will be paying very close attention to the way they handle their production process so as to not make the same mistakes that GTAT did.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things that GTAT complained about was that they spent the 30% of staff's time, so like the entire staff, supposedly, according to GTAT, was spent interacting with Apple, because Apple micromanages everything. And of course, one of the things you and I were talking about before the show was it occurred to me that because Apple was making this deal with a company that's never done this before, Apple may well have been micromanaging more than normally would. And because of that, that may have contributed to GTAT's collapse. Like Apple, in other words, Apple's own efforts to ensure that GTAT could do what it was supposed to do may have contributed to GTAT not being able to do it in the first place.
That's very possible. Yeah, Apple's presence may have hampered GTAT's ability to actually do their job.
They clearly were not used to doing business with Apple, right? Foxconn is.
Oh, yeah. Foxconn has been doing business with Apple for a long time. They know how to play Apple's micromanagement game, clearly.
Clearly.
Because they keep getting contracts to make just insane numbers of iPhones and iPads.
And Macs.
And Macs, yeah.
The what stings, though, from a, you know, obviously from our perspective, because we're here in the U.S., and not all of our readers are in the U.S., but the Sapphire that GTAT was making was being made in the U.S. It was yet another effort by Apple to bring manufacturing back to the United States. And now apparently they're going to take it to China.
That does suck. But on the other hand, they tried and GTAT couldn't follow through. So at some point, business is business and they have to find a way to get the Sapphire that they want.
Yeah. And to that effect, actually, the way you said that raises a very good point. I am quoting from Focus Taiwan, which, to be fair, sourced the China Economic Weekly. Right, so this is a third hand. I'm quoting something that's second hand. Well, actually, that would have been third hand because the original report was sourced somewhere. Anyway, here's the point. Definitely pedantic. Market observers revealed that Apple has not given up on a plan to use Sapphire displays in its next generation smartphones. Although the company continues to cautiously evaluate the adoption of the scratch resistant screens to ensure that there are sufficient supplies. So the point being that if Apple truly is getting into bed with Foxconn to build this new plant in China, Apple is clearly still interested in doing Sapphire.
Yep.
For the iPhone.
There you go. And they wanted to make the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus Sapphire Surface devices. That isn't happening, clearly. So looks like maybe the next generation iPhone.
Yeah, or it could be the generation after that. Now, Corning, sure. Was that a piece from Wired or Cult of Mac? That John was talking to us about this morning.
I don't remember.
It was Cult of Mac. Corning is still making Gorilla Glass for Apple's iPhones, right? That Gorilla Glass was the original material that Apple used, and it was this thing that Corning showed Steve Jobs as Steve was looking around for it was a last minute change, as I remember, for the original iPhone.
Yes, when the iPhone was introduced, Apple or Steve stood on stage and talked about the plastic surface, and when it shipped, it was Gorilla Glass.
That's right. That's a good point. So what apparently Apple is using right now is Gorilla Glass 3, first few generations, 20, this is from Cult of Mac. 2012, Corning introduced Gorilla Glass 2. The year after that, two comments hit the scene, skimming live for our readers. I think Gorilla Glass 4 is on the way. You know, Corning has made a bunch of money on this material. Lots of people.
Yes, they make it for more than just Apple.
Yeah, because of Apple. This was a material that had been put aside for years, and it was kind of shown as hey, why don't we show this to Steve kind of thing.
And they did, and Steve was like, yeah.
And then everybody else wanted to use it too. So it's used in lots of smartphones at this point, especially lots of the higher end smartphones from Android and whatnot. They're coming out with a new one. They still think that it's really awesome. They still think from a cost material, from a cost basis, that the glasses, Gorilla Glass in particular, is better than Sapphire. So Corning, according to Cult of Mac, seems confident being able to keep Apple's business. Yet here we have this report coming from China that Apple is building a new plant with Foxconn. So it's interesting.
It is. And I think that if Apple can find a way to make it come together, that they will produce a synthetic sapphire glass surface iPhone in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sapphire isn't going to be limited to camera lens covers and Touch ID buttons.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think eventually we're going to have it be on iPhones and maybe even eventually iPads.
You know, once the process has been refined to the point where it becomes far more economical, then sure. Then you start getting sapphire glass iPads.
Could be.
And could then be. That'll lose the Ion X glass on the Apple Watch Sport.
Well, I don't. Apple could make that Sport version with Sapphire out the gate. Getting enough Sapphire to make the Apple Watch is a logistical task of a orders of magnitude easier than getting enough for iPhone.
All right, so I have a question for you since you are so into watches,
mm-hmm.
And so
steampunk watch.
Steampunk watch.
Actually, my watches are effectively steampunk because they're mechanical.
Now all we need to do is braze some copper on them and you're set.
Fair enough. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
Oh, right. So the crystal on a watch, mm-hmm. that can be made out of glass. There are some companies that are making that out of sapphire.
Yeah, most real watches are certainly sapphire.
Okay. So that sapphire, does it add thickness and weight that you wouldn't have with other glass crystals?
You know, I don't know. My guess is that it's the opposite, because you can probably have less sapphire material with the same tensile strength and whatnot of glass.
Okay.
That would be my guess, but I don't actually know. I don't know how to properly answer that question.
All right. Well, maybe we have a listener that does, and then they can enlighten me. But where I was going with that. Wow. I really had to work my way through that one. If the sport watch would have been thicker and weighed more because of sapphire glass, that may have been a contributing factor in going with Ion X glass instead.
For the sport one?
For the sport.
Well, didn't they say something about being sweat resistant? Not sweat resistant. I'm not saying that right, but I thought that one of the reasons, one of the things that they said about that Ion X glass was something about sweat. I mean, sapphire is clearly sweat resistant.
I would assume so. I mean,
it's impermeable. It's impermeable. Yes.
Right. Yes, it's impermeable. I don't know, but it seems to me that sweat resistance would apply more to the watch body than the clear surface material that covers the display.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I have found, since Apple said that it would be using Ion X glass on the sport version instead of sapphire, I have been really curious as to why. I don't understand that decision. It seems like the sport version would want the tougher material because sports people are more likely to fall and bang their wrist into things and crash their bikes and trip and fall and you know,
fall off waterfalls.
Fall off waterfalls. Fall, right? As one does. Smash their hands on rocks as they're climbing, or, you know, right? It seems like you'd want the tougher material on the more active device.
Yes, I agree completely. And just so you know, every mishap that you just described is something that I have personally experienced.
Oh, sure. Yeah, you happen to be a very active person. Those are not things that I typically... clumsy. Endure,
but you could.
I could. So I've wondered. I mean, there must be a reason for it, and I don't think it's cost. I don't think it was like you know, we need to shave a quarter off of the cost of.
And by a quarter, you mean 25 cents?
I mean 25 cents, correct?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think there has to be some physical reason why they didn't go with sapphire.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a monetary reason.
And I don't know what that reason is.
And it's one of those things that Apple isn't telling us because secrets. Yeah. Yeah. So anyhow, back to what our topic was supposed to be. Very interesting that, that Corning thinks that Apple is sticking with them. And now we have this report that Foxconn is going to make a sapphire factory.
Yeah. Yes, 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 yes. I am curious to see where this goes.
Yes. And now that I think about it, sapphire glass, iPhone to replace the 6 and 6 Plus, not going to happen. It will be the phone after that, because Foxconn needs time to get the factory set up, ramp up production, and then get enough inventory so they can start cutting screens.
Well, but remember that Sapphire was supposed to be on the iPhone 6. We know this now. This was more than a rumor. This was an actual plan. And that deal was penned in December of 2013. Where, you know, nothing
had been, that's a really good point.
Nothing had been built yet. I mean, Apple already owned the factory in Mesa, but nothing had been built out. The furnaces hadn't been built. So we're in November, and Apple is inking a deal, supposedly, with Foxconn to build this. That seems like it could well be on the next iPhone.
All right. The concession I will give to that is if there's already a structure in place that Foxconn can move into and start installing furnaces and making glass, then the successor to the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus could have Sapphire. If they have to build a structure from the ground up, then I think that could add enough time to make it just too tight to hit the next iPhone model. And so it would have to be
that. We don't know what building a factory means in this particular case. That's what the report says, that they're going to be building a factory in this area in China, but that could mean building a building, or it could actually mean they have
refitting an existing structure.
Correct. So we don't really know. Yeah, interesting. This the whole thing. The whole thing is interesting. Sapphire is interesting to me. These developments are interesting. The deal with GTAT and how it went south, and the fact that it did go south, that's all very interesting. That Apple, again, there are companies that make Sapphire. There are companies that make Sapphire today. Apple could have tapped a company that makes Sapphire to make Sapphire. But instead, for the second time, assuming this report of Taiwan is true, Apple is tapping a company that has not made Sapphire to make Sapphire. And probably to make Sapphire in ways that have never been made before.
What could possibly go wrong?
Well, Apple doesn't misfire very often. The reason why GTAT has made so many headlines, the reason why you and I have talked about it so much, the reason why it's gotten so much mainstream coverage is because Apple doesn't make many missteps.
Right, and this is clearly a pretty big misstep.
Seems like it.
Well, Apple is a quick learner also. So I'm thinking that Apple has good cause to have a great deal of faith in Foxconn's ability to produce the Sapphire it needs. Otherwise, this wouldn't be happening.
Yeah, I can imagine the folks at Foxconn. If you'd come to us in the first place,
yeah,
could have saved yourself a little headache there.
And I'm sure Apple was like, well, maybe, but don't screw this up.
Yeah. Don't screw this up. Now, I do still wonder where the Apple Watch is being manufactured. If you remember, I had a cockamamie theory that it was being, that the watch itself was being assembled in Arizona.
And at the time, it didn't seem cockamamie. But I'm thinking now, especially with the Sapphire, assuming this report is true, with Sapphire being produced in China, the Apple Watch is not being made in the United States.
Probably not. Now, Apple has said that it's repurposing, or it's working with local state and city officials in Arizona to repurpose that plant. So I don't know. We'll see. I hope that I'd like to see some manufacturing come back to the U.S. So if anybody can do it, it's Apple.
Yes.
So we'll have to see.
Yeah. It certainly wasn't GTAT.
So I have a blog over at geektells.com, GEEKTELLS.com.
No way. Tell me about this, Brian.
Well, it's recently gotten a facelift. Julie Kuehl. What is the name of Julie? I've known Julie for so long. I think of her as Julie. She has a company name. Goodness.
Hold on. I'm doing a Google search right now.
Yeah. Anyway, Julie has done some writing for us. She's a designer. She's also really good on the back end stuff, setting up WordPress and getting your database in order, that sort of thing. She redid my theme to make it actually work.
That's awesome. And actually, I like the theme. I think it looks really good.
Yeah, she did a good job. She did a good job. But, I tend to, I use that to talk about things that aren't really TMO specific. I write a lot about my novel writing process and things. But, post some photographs, philosophical rants, music reviews, TV reviews, things like that.
Straightforward Web Solutions.
Thank you. Straightforward Web Solutions. We'll have a link linked down in the show notes.
Yes, we will.
And anyway, so that was, she recently redid my blog, and you're redoing your own blog, right?
I am. And that blog would be Fresh Brewed Tales.
So FreshBrewedTales.com.
And that's the website where I write about all the stuff that I see people doing in coffee shops. And more often than not, it's people just being really stupid.
It's true. Funny stuff. I love it. I love it. I still wish I could subscribe, but I love it.
Oh, you'll be able to subscribe very soon. And that's because I realized where I was having a major problem on the back end, and that has been addressed. And so I'll be able to turn the subscription thing on. Actually, it'll probably happen this weekend.
Oh, good. Excellent.
Yeah. But as far as the theme goes, the look of the site, that is going to be changing. I'm working on ideas now, and I'm going to be a brave little toaster, and I'm going to code it myself.
That is really cool.
I know. I'm actually really excited about it. It'll be a great learning experience because I really need to have a deeper and better understanding of CSS. And what better way to do it than by doing it myself?
So very, very, very true.
Yes. But in the meantime, you can still see all the content and all the awesome things that people do right in plain sight so that I can photograph them, which I know freaks you out, which is why when we were together and you remember the cell phone guy?
Mm-hmm.
I did not take a photo of him because you were pretty uptight about that. So I drew him instead.
You know, I don't know why I'm uptight about it.
It's okay. I didn't want you to feel more uncomfortable than you already did.
Yeah.
So,
but you've also posted a photograph that I myself took.
And it is a glorious photograph because you happen to catch a guy looking at porn on his laptop in the coffee shop.
Openly.
And you got a photo from him.
Brazenly.
Yeah, totally. Brazenly.
Although yes. It was your extraordinary clever idea to put the black bar on the porn, not the guy.
No, I put it on the guy, not the porn.
Oh, you did put it on the guy. Okay, yeah. That's right. I'm sorry. Of course you did. That's why it's funny.
That's why it's funny.
All right. I'll just erase that. No one needs to know what an idiot I am.
Yeah, no one needs to know, right?
No one needs to know. No one needs to know. All right. On that happy note, I think we can move to our next topic, which is actually kind of related. It's the Apple Watch.
Oh, right. That's kind of funny because we've gone far enough into the show and talked about so much. I was like, I don't remember what our other topic is.
So there were a couple little bits of news, little tiny pieces of news, really. Nothing earth shaking. Might not have neither one of them. There we go. I'll say it that way. Neither one of them might have gotten any attention from us if it wasn't a holiday week, but it did. So the first thing was that Time released released three top 10 lists for 2014. Top 10 gadgets of 2014, video games and toys. And now we talked about the gadget. We talked about the top 10 gadgets on TDO earlier this week, yesterday.
We did. Oh yeah, that would be earlier this week.
That would be earlier this week. And you know, it's the thing that we talked about then was just how fascinating it is that Time would name a device that hasn't shipped yet its top gadget of the year.
And that would be the Apple Watch.
That'd be the Apple Watch, which is supposed to ship sometime in 2015. And we also talked about the fact that there are a lot of companies out there. I'm looking particularly at Microsoft, where if Microsoft had announced this and said they were going to ship it sometime next year, it'd be called vaporware because Microsoft used to do that all the time.
Yeah, well, yeah, that was a business tactic for them.
Yeah,
it worked very well.
In order to keep. Like, if they knew a competitor was going to be doing something, in order to keep that competitor from being able to get any steam behind its sales, Microsoft would announce that it was doing the same thing, whether or not it ever actually shipped it.
And simply by announcing the product, it had the effect of killing their competitor's business.
Now, what's, you know, this is another interesting aspect about the difference between Apple and Microsoft. So Microsoft did that all the time, frequently, I should say, to, as we just said, to destroy competitors, you know, before they could get a foothold in some particular market. When Apple enters a market, it tends to lift a bunch of boats that hadn't even been built yet.
I like how you said that.
Right? So, you know, Apple enters the smartphone market, and now smartphones are a thing. Apple enters the media tablet market, and tablets are a thing. Apple entered the ultralight category of computers, and those became a thing. Smartwatches had been, you know, everyone was, especially once people like Samsung found out that Apple was going to be doing a smartwatch, they did everything they could to rush something to market, to beat Apple to market. And, you know, and no one cared because it was crap. But then once Apple
it
actually...
It was crap and included creepy commercials.
Yes, it did include creepy commercials. And, but, you know... Now that Samsung knows what to copy, and now that the Google knows what to copy, it is quite possible that the next generation of Android smartwatches, or maybe even Microsoft smartwatches, of course they've got their ban, but that's another issue.
Yeah.
Once those come along, they might do a lot better than they ever would have without the Apple Watch.
I think you're absolutely right. Of course, it will do much better because the Apple Watch exists. Simply the fact that Apple is creating a product generates awareness for competitors' products. And a perfect example is Apple Pay.
Yeah.
The number of Android users that had no idea that they could do NFC-based payments from their smartphone, I mean, it was ridiculous.
With Google Wallet.
With Google Wallet. Yeah, they had no idea that they had that feature on their phone. But as soon as people started swiping their iPhones over credit card readers in Whole Foods, then you have all these cashiers and everyone around them, all the other people in line going, I want to do that, but I only have an Android phone.
Right.
And then people start telling them, well, actually, you can. And then mobile payments just start going up across the board.
Right.
Yeah, so I think we very well could see something similar with smartwatches simply because Apple is entering the market.
Right, which is technically a side topic. But it's an interesting observation. It's an interesting observation that Apple doesn't kill a market by entering it. Apple actually lifts that market.
You know, I'm okay with side topics. I kind of slide into side topics a lot.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Side topics can be good. So the actual topic is...
Oh, do tell. Wait, what are we talking about again?
We're talking about Apple. Oh, we're talking about how Apple announces something, says it's going to ship it nebulously sometime next year, and rather than Apple being attacked for announcing vaporware, instead they get Time Magazine's top 10 gadget of 2014. That's fascinating.
Oh, right.
It's fascinating. Right. And then late yesterday, we had another story about the Apple Watch, and that was how BuzzFeed is a publication that made the, you know, five weird tricks thing.
Yeah, five word tricks to get get Jeff to go down rabbit holes on podcasts.
Exactly. You know, the list articles, the BuzzFeed rose to prominence by focusing on lists. And then they started making a bunch of money by removing ordinary traditional ads and replacing them all with what's called native advertising, so-called native advertising or sponsored content, where a lot of their content is actually written by advertisers and labeled as such.
And it's presented as an article, but also noted that it is.
Yeah, exactly. And they apparently have brought in $100 million in 2014, and they've got more than 700 employees helping them do that. And in a letter to employees, the CEO told his employees that he was going to buy everybody, or the company would buy everybody, an Apple Watch if they hit a new metric, 200 million visits in a single month and 750 million video views in a single month. And that if they did that, everyone would get an Apple Watch. And so it's interesting to me that a product that hasn't even shipped yet is being used to incentivize a company. And they're going to spend 0.245% a minimum of their annual revenue in making that happen.
That's a significant amount of money.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. It is. $250,000 on the cheap side. You know, that's if everybody gets the entry level device, which was, we should mention right now, by the way, that we were corrected about the Space Gray.
Yes, we had a few sharp listeners that contacted us and reminded us that there will also be a black or Space Gray version of the Apple Watch.
Yeah, and this is because we were going over the different combinations of choices people had to make.
Right.
Right.
So, and, yeah, and we didn't have enough choices for them.
We appreciate the correction on that. But so, you know, it's $250,000, assuming that they buy the least expensive model, which I would imagine is not necessarily the case. And it just kind of made me realize that there's an undeniable vibe developing on the Apple Watch. This device that isn't—it's not going to ship for probably 4 or 5, maybe even 6 months from now.
You know, when Apple announced Apple Watch, and the hype was big, and then we saw what sort of gap we were going to have between announcement and shipping. Mm-hmm. I had concerns that Apple would not be able to keep the interest or the momentum going, and that when the Apple Watch shipped, sales wouldn't be as high as they otherwise would have been had the watch shipped earlier. And I'm thinking now that is an unwarranted concern.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I can't really see. The thing is, I can't necessarily define what I think this vibe is. I don't know that I can put my finger on what seems to be happening with this thing. It's not like I think that Time Magazine has somehow, you know, sealed the success of the Apple Watch, or that you know, because BuzzFeed's going to buy 700 of these things, that somehow means that that Apple's going to sell, you know, some very, very high number of watches. It's not that. It's just the way people are talking about, the way mainstream folks are talking about the Apple Watch, the way it's being discussed as jewelry, the way, I don't know, it's all really interesting. And it's like there's momentum building behind this thing.
I think momentum is an excellent word choice there. Yeah, there's momentum building, and I think that momentum will continue to grow now all the way up through the launch, the official launch of the watch. And I think that Apple is going to be in the same position then as they are now with iPhones, where they simply can't make enough to meet demand.
Maybe, yeah, could be. Could be, but I think that here's where I'm going to quibble with you on that. Apple has become very adept at making iPhones, working with its supply chain. I mean,
yet they still can't produce enough.
Usually not, right? When Apple first announces a device, usually there's difficulty meeting demand. But I think this quarter they're supposedly gonna sell somewhere between 60 and 70 million iPhones.
And I think they would sell more if they could make more.
Probably.
I mean, people are still having to wait to get an iPhone 6 or 6 Plus.
Right. Fair enough. If I don't think the Apple Watch will sell in anywhere near those numbers. If you remember, I had that bet with Rocco Pindola, where I bet him that Apple would sell 10 million in a quarter. I think that was a very bad bet on my part. I don't think Apple's going to sell 10 million, but I think that Apple could sell 5 million of these things in a quarter. Between 5 and 10 is certainly possible. But my point is, when you, for a lot of companies, that would be a major achievement. For Apple, it's not any, it's nowhere near the achievement of what it does every, each and every quarter with iPhones or even iPads or even Macs, really. Well, I don't know. A lot of other companies make a lot more computers than Apple makes Macs.
That's true.
Not a lot. Actually, only a couple of companies anymore. But, you know, the number of iPhones that Apple makes and the number of iPads that Apple makes, being able to make 5 to, you know, 7 million in a quarter, 10 million in a quarter, even 15 million in a quarter, if it's just off the charts, which I don't think Apple will sell, Apple Watches will sell that many. I don't think, I think Apple can probably meet demand on this. It just seems like a comparatively easy task.
Comparatively. Yeah, maybe. I'm going to remain skeptical only because we don't know exactly what's involved in the manufacturing process. So we don't have any way of gauging how quickly Apple can make or how Apple's manufacturers can make acceptable products.
Yeah, it's true. We're in an hour and 1 minute.
Oh, well, there you go. So if you don't have anything else to add,
no.
I know exactly how to wrap this up.
Let's do it.
And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. And that's all for this week.
And stay subscribed, and also enjoy your Thanksgiving holiday.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving, everybody. And to everyone else outside the U.S., happy Thursday, or Wednesday, or weekend. We'll see you on... Why does anyone let me do this? We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.